This show is about spoilers and discussion. It's also about spooky things that are best enjoyed after you see the movie. So any movie we talk about, we recommend you go and see. You've been warned.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
The horror. There is no shortage of monsters to haunt our dreams.
The horror.
You got red on you.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
The horror.
Alive, it's alive.
Groovy.
Hello and welcome to Oh, the Horror, a podcast about horror movies from an enthusiast and a filthy casual's perspective. I am the filthy casual, Steve Allman.
And I'm the enthusiast, Rob Holmes.
You said enthusiastically.
Yes, I did.
Hey, everybody, we're back again, and we are taking a look at the world of horror films, according to me and Rob. We're going on Rob's recommendation yet again. Yeah. I find myself looking through the glasses of the indie European horror scene this time.
Yeah, absolutely.
We look at the 2006 film from, what country is this from again?
It's a French Romanian kind
French
of
Romanian.
So
okay.
they kind of worked on it as a co-production. It's called Them from 2006, also called Ils. That's the original title.
Yes, Them, directed by David Moreau and Xavier Poulad.
Moreau. Xavier Poulad. Yeah.
Poulad.
And written by them as well.
Yes. So just as a main sort of synopsis and rule, I guess we could say, is right. That there aren't going to be any real spoilers for this movie at any time. It's more going to be a general analysis and what we thought of the movie, maybe with getting a little bit of details in there.
We'll get a little spoilery, but we will
we'll let you know.
We'll let you know before we really delve into that, because there's some stuff that we should definitely talk about towards the end of it.
Yeah, because I figured that, again, while it's not the biggest crime in the world to spoil all of Child's Play, we probably, as we're getting into these more classic and even lesser known horror movies, maybe we should leave that more to the guessing public if you wanted to actually watch it yourself.
If you know Child's Play has sequels, which we do, I mean, they've come out in all these years past
Trillions
1988,
of them.
There's six of them total, then we know that Chucky always comes back. So, giving away some of that stuff, you know, it happens. So, yeah, let's get right into it.
Yes. So, getting into what this movie actually is or what is about, you described it, and I would describe it as well, in the genre of horror films known as home invasion movies.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. This is definitely along the lines of movies like The Strangers, which came out about a year afterwards. To me, personally, this is a superior film to The Strangers. I know we've talked before.
Starring the immaculate Liv Tyler and some other guy.
I think Scott Speedman, right?
Scott Speedman, yeah. Yes, as you would know.
Was it Scott Speedman or Scott Wolf? I think it was Scott Speedman.
It's a guy that looks like and acts like a man named Scott.
Yep.
I think that's the most important thing.
He's a Scott.
Yes.
Not a great Scott.
Not a great Scott. No David Tennant here.
No David Tennant, yeah.
Yeah, but Them takes place a year prior. Honestly, this movie looks like it was made in 1999. From the very start, and the first thing that I see is a brick Nokia cell phone. I'm like, yes, this is Eastern Europe in the early 2000s,
yep.
Because they're about 5 years behind on us with the cell phone technology.
Yeah, but you cannot break those Nokia phones, no matter what you do. You can drop it off a building, and that thing will last.
It was actually the murder weapon in the sequel to Them. So I think before we start getting into what this movie is kind of about, or how I felt about this movie, or how we felt, what to you makes a good home invasion horror movie, to be specific?
A good home invasion horror movie, I like it where you're kind of going along, you're meeting your characters, you get a little backstory on them, and then all of a sudden, everything is upended. Their entire lives are just completely thrown for a loop. And this one, I feel like, does it perfectly. And then keeps you along for the ride up until the very end. It doesn't let up. Once it gets to that point, there's no time where you're like, all right, well, I'm going to go and, you know, make something. I'm going to get something to eat while they're just doing whatever or talking back and forth. A lot of the time in home invasion movies, you have the person who's invading the place talking to them or discussing something with them. Or there's like a reason behind it. And I feel like in this film, it's just happening just because. We picked you. Why? Doesn't matter.
See, now, and that's a good enough premise for a home invasion movie or a horror movie in general, but I'm of the Home Alone school of home invasion movies, and I use this as a as a good example because eventually I'd like to know some form of reason or logic as to why this is happening,
mm-hmm.
and the sort of film to have a very good continuity with a sense of space. Because of it, because a home invasion movie, at least the premise of the seemingly genre mm-hmm. of horror films like that, it's kind of perfect because, A, it can be done on a budget because there aren't that many location changes. And it's an exercise, it can be an exercise in good writing and good right. directing, because if you can occupy a good sense of a scenery or good tension in that one particular space, you got yourself a good movie.
Oh, yeah.
The problem that I had mainly with them was because I didn't ever feel like there was a good sense of space or continuity or real motivation from any of these people's pursuers. I will say this movie starts off with a bang.
Oh, it starts off with one hell of a bang.
I don't think it would be too much of a spoiler to at least describe the beginning scene. Well, why don't you go into it, Rob?
So this movie begins, number one, it's based on a true story. I think that's another thing that makes home invasion movies scary.
Really? We watch a home invasion,
but a home invasion movie in particular, because you're in your house, it's supposed to be the place where you're safe and everything's all right. In this film in particular, you're in the middle of nowhere, number one, and the house is massive. Let's just put that out there. This house is gigantic, so it's like it feels...
One might say this house is too big for this movie's own good.
Oh,
I would say.
I think it could have been explored more, but we can talk about that in a little bit. So the beginning of this film starts off with a mother and daughter driving home and arguing with each other, getting a little, you know...
About really nothing.
But basic mundane stuff that, you know, mothers and daughters mm-hmm. or you know, parents and children argue about. And she sees something in the middle of the road, swerves, and ends up hitting a tree or a light post or a lamppost and wrapping a car around that. So she goes to try and open up the hood and check on stuff, and the daughter's going to start the car, and the mom's like, start the car, and it doesn't start. She messes with something else. She's like, try and start it again, and then we don't hear from the mom again.
Mm-hmm. And the scene builds and builds into ways of like, okay, now she gets out of the car. She hears weird noises.
Mm-hmm. And then she's saying, mom, 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 and then all of a sudden you just hear, mom, and she freaks the hell out, gets back in the car, and then all this weird stuff starts happening at once. Like, you have... the lamps breaks from up top. You have noises coming from around the whole car. The hood mm-hmm. comes down, and then something is in the car.
Right.
You know, and then
it takes her or whatever.
It starts off with a bang. It really starts off very, very strong. And then from there, we're introduced to Olivia Bonamy's character of Clementine, who works at she's a French teacher at a school in Bucharest.
Mm-hmm.
So they definitely don't normally live there. She's just moved there, I think, about 3 months earlier, 3 to 6 months. So she's gotten this manor or estate out there. And this house, she heads home. And what's awesome about when she heads home is she goes right by the car where this murder happened.
And that's actually a very good moment or shot, because I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So it's like a nice, it's a transition, it's passing of the mantle from one sort of scene or character
yeah.
to another,
and it shows it relates. That's the one thing a lot of these films do. They have a beginning scene that doesn't actually tie into the rest of the film.
They're it's a great cold open for mm-hmm. a movie, and one
yeah.
that I actually love. And then I started to get into more of problems with leading up to when she gets home. And as she gets home, like, we are introduced to her boyfriend and we get all of these other things. But not to get too plot heavy, I think the main reason as to why I kind of had more problems with this movie than you did, because you love this movie.
Oh, I think it's great. It's short, it's sweet, it's to the point, you know?
So this movie is actually a brisk, like, 90-some-odd minutes?
Not even, man. It's an hour and 17 minutes.
Hour and 17.
And that's, like, including credits. We're talking about from start to finish, maybe an hour and 11, hour and 12 minutes. To me, this film, it acts as a counterpart or a counterpoint to the Black Mirror series. It actually could have not been a film, but actually an episode of a television show where it's like, what happens when you don't have all that technology around you all the time? What happens when you're isolated in the middle of nowhere? What do you do then?
Right. And and while those all lead to good episodes of Black Mirror and The Twilight Zone, mm-hmm. when you want to support it into a film, or at least a semi-feature length film, I said that this movie was 90 minutes. It's And you said it was even shorter than that. It felt like it was about nearly 2 hours because of what I was watching. As I'm like, it feels so arduous because I don't feel like, yes, the assailants that are pursuing these people, they're tormenting them and they're like obviously like kind of terrorizing them in their own home, and you barely get to know really what's going on with any of these characters. But the main thing is the problem of the house itself, the way that the film is structured around going around all these rooms in this seemingly abandoned mansion. This place looks like a run-down, like, chateau.
Oh, it's massive. Now, there's parts of it that I think are amazing because of that. I would have liked if they had maybe explored the house more or stayed in the house more.
Or maybe explained why the fuck he has, like, this just enormous house.
Well, the guy's a writer. So her husband's a writer who is Michael Cohen, plays Lucas. So you're introduced to him in the middle of this, like, garden area, just writing. And it has a lot of old history to the house. So to me, the house is almost like a character in itself. When you're seeing it, you're like, this is massive. This is huge. When they're running up the stairs when she's like fooling around with them a little bit, they run up two different staircases to get to the same place. And you realize, holy crap, this place is that big where you could go two different ways to get upstairs and still end up in the same place. It's like a giant maze. And to me, that was kind of like, great, when they finally get into the house, they're like rats trapped in a maze. And it's like they've let a bunch of cats in to come after them.
See, but if you take that back to getting a sense of actually establishing your place in a movie, take it to The Shining, all
sure.
Right? We had about a half hour of exploring every single room or major part of that hotel.
Yeah.
That place was huge. We got, like, Timmy riding around in his tricycle, like, almost taking us on a tour of the entire building. We see Jack Nicholson playing through that big lounge with, like, the ball and everything.
Yeah.
Before everything goes down, we see almost every part of that place. And with them, it takes it in a different approach where the second that trouble starts, these people now need to utilize every single part of this space. And when the audience isn't really familiar with any of it.
Right.
And so there's a part in the movie where they're being terrorized and the woman needs to go up into the attic and get outside through a top window. Mm-hmm. And by the time when she goes up into the attic, it is a full-blown enormous attic what it looks like an inside of a, like, the back of a butcher shop with, like, all of these, like,
so
plastic sheets.
There's a lot of plastic sheets in there, but it looks like they got the place and they were working on different areas of it, or maybe it had been being worked on by, like,
right,
a contractor. So to me, it kind of gave it a different feel to it. So we have the plastic stuff and it kind of defines that area. So, like, this is the area we're going to have a couple of scares in here, and we're going to have a chase scene that cuts through here, and it adds a little more depth to it than just being like, hey, we're in a house and we're running through an attic. Oh, now we're running down here. Oh, now we're running down here. It's different set dressings and set pieces that I feel add a lot to it. Now, completely different from The Shining, because The Shining, it's a giant hotel, and that's mm-hmm. that has a lot of history behind it, and the hotel has a ton of history.
Granted, that's part of the story, and
right,
that's, yeah.
And I feel like if they had drawn that out too much in this film and showed you too much stuff, people would be like, nothing is ever going to happen in this movie, because it does take mm-hmm. about 40 minutes for anything to really ramp up.
Right, and I use The Shining as a kind of a poor example, because I think it's a bit more of a of a key example. Like, I could have just used a walk around, just been like, okay, I'm brushing my teeth here. What's up in the attic? Oh yeah, we're still doing under construction. Like, just
sure,
some, like, throwaway lines for
absolutely
something.
Now,
it's like, oh, isn't this place fucking huge? And you never use this room.
We're talking about a film, and I like to give them all the benefit of the doubt when these movies are made, and I like to look at all of the sides of it. when watching some of these films. This movie was made in 30 days. It was a very, very fast-paced film for it to be shot in that amount of time. So you're not going to have a lot of extra, and plus it had probably had a limited budget. I couldn't find exact budget figures on it, but I'm sure it wasn't that high. To me, it's super intense, and once it starts and gets to that point, it just doesn't let up. And that's personally why I think it's awesome.
See, and that to me is what I think makes a good horror movie, but it never really got, like, it never fully got going for me. Because the second that, like, say, okay, the lights go out, and then all of these steps that are taken to terrorize the couple weren't that effective in the moment, but I feel like could have been made more effective were the, I guess, denouement or end reveal of this movie a bit more cathartic.
Sure.
The fact that it was random or seemingly without cause, like, makes it terrifying, but the lack of reason still doesn't really make up for the fact that I didn't really feel connected with what was really going on, because it still didn't, like, my suspension of disbelief was not fully suspended enough to enjoy that movie.
So I have to disagree, because when you look at the clock on when stuff is happening, she wakes up, it's like 1:45 in the morning, she goes back to bed, and then she hears, like, the car radio on, and she's like, what the hell? It's 3:45 in the morning,
yeah.
And that's when stuff starts getting crazy. Actually, a little after that, probably around, like, 4 is when, like, shit really hits the fan. And that's why I really like this, because it isn't like, okay, we're home, we're about to go to bed, and then stuff starts. It's like, we've just gotten woken up, we were in deep sleep, everything was fine, and now what the hell is happening?
Right, and
we have
right
no communication to get out to anybody.
Exactly, and I think that's kind of a cool thing that this movie actually does do right, because, like, the second that the terror starts, even reflected in the beginning scene, you get, like, events almost seemingly happen in real time. There's no weird cuts. There's no time spent away from the situation that's happening right then and there, and that's cool. But again, like, if it were paced, the reason that opening scene works is because it's so short.
Mm-hmm.
That stretched out into nearly an hour and 10 minutes didn't seem to hold up too well. Like, I feel like at least the level of filmmaking was not ready to be stretched that thin, even at that length for me.
Oh, man, I completely disagree. To me, this is exactly the length that you want to keep it at. If you try to go any longer with it, there's going to be a lot of extraneous stuff that you can be like, didn't need to see that. Didn't need to see that. Yeah, that totally could have gotten cut.
True, and that's why I'm not making the movies. But and that's why we're the ones that are just hosting a podcast about it.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell me a bit more about the fun facts about this movie?
There's some fun things in general about this film. The things that really freaked me out about it was that clicking noise, man.
Right.
Noise that you hear at certain times and you're like, what the hell? You know it has to be something simple, but the fact that it's dark, they can't see anything that's going on with it, that amps up the fear factor. The fact that there's lights being shown through the windows, shutters are being slammed left and right, but you can't see who it is. You just see a light and you're like, what the hell is going on? You see some hooded figures moving around everywhere, and they seem to be everywhere at once. You go from one area, then another area, and there has to, you know, there's more than one. And at that point, you're like, okay, there's more than one of these people who are terrorizing them. How many are there? And that's where it's kind of like you're not introduced to all of them throughout the movie. You just kind of see them as it goes throughout. And to me, that's scarier than knowing, oh, there's three people that are coming after me.
I kind of like that, but it's the jump scares along with the idea of the sense of space in that house. It just didn't work for me. Like,
yeah,
when you see a guy like, okay, he's just been stabbed, and he's like kind of like seeing if anybody's outside the door, and he's looking up over the window, and then just a bang happens, and then he's just like, huh, what? And then we don't even know what he saw.
I think that's what makes it great, because it's amping up the fear and amping up the tension, scaring these people. They're toying with these people throughout the entire time. They're messing with them until they're ready to do what they're ready to do.
See, but I think that the actual terror that comes in the idea of a home invasion movie is that the audience has got to fully be immersed in what the victims are feeling. they have to completely empathize with what's going on with them. And I didn't feel anything like that. Like, I felt like I was watching people being messed with.
Have you ever traveled abroad to a place that, like, no, I'm serious. So when I was in college, I went to Switzerland for, like, a study abroad program.
Yeah.
We're in a place that we don't really know. There's not a ton of people around. They have these giant house chateaus that we were staying in. If this happened at, like, 4 in the morning and I had only been there for a short amount of time, I'm going to be scared shitless. So I started going back to thinking about that when I had stayed in this place, and I was like, holy crap, this is legit terrifying. Like, you're in a place that you don't really know that well. She doesn't speak the language very well because she only speaks French and people are speaking French to her. You find out in the beginning when she's at the school, this woman's like, she's like, oh, yeah, my French isn't that good. She's like, oh, I can't even really speak your language very well. So, hey, this is about as good as I can do. To me, that's where you're a stranger in a strange land. All of a sudden, and you're in the middle of nowhere, they took the car and moved it wherever. And the only person you have is, like, your significant other. And that's it. You're kind of along there with them being like, man, if this happened to me, holy shit, I don't know what I would do. You would think, hey, I'm going to go and just find a knife or grab this and that. But you're like, are they already in the house? Like, do they already have that? I mean, they grabbed some weapons. But to me, it pulls at me as one of those things being like, well, I've gone to these places, you know, I've gone overseas and to a different place, and it just scares the hell out of me, man. Like, I mean, watching this movie, really, it ramps the tension up for me the entire time until you get to the reveals. And some of the reveals a little strange, but then realizing this is legit based on a true story, holy shit, man.
Like, I like the idea that revealing that this movie's based on a true story after the film's over.
Yeah.
That was really cool. Like, revealing what you had to go off of then, that kind of bummed me out a bit more. because we all know that, like, okay, so, like, The Conjuring, like, okay, that's clearly just based on, like, a chair moved, and so make two movies and an entire franchise out of this. Hearing the end of this, okay, do we want to talk about...
So let's get into some spoilers.
Okay.
So this movie is based on an Austrian couple who was terrorized and murdered by three teens at their vacation home in Romania.
And we're saying teenagers.
Teenagers. And, well, in the film, so in this film, we find out, and the big reveal is the ones who are terrorizing this couple are all kids between the age of 10 and 15 years old.
These kids look about between the ages of 8 and 10.
But you see some of the larger ones. There's a couple of reveals. It looks like she's at one point killed, at least Clem seems to have killed one of them at one point, and Lucas has killed another one at another point. So you're like, all right, they can fight back. Instead of a lot of these movies, they can't fight back. You know, it's like, oh, we try to fight back, but we end up getting killed anyway.
Oh, no, and that's some of the beauty of it, knowing that the victim then can be empowered and fight back.
They do get empowered a little bit, and they fight back, but there's still this just utter terror that permeates this entire film, because you're like, why? Why are they doing this? And their excuse is, they wouldn't play with us.
Yeah, and that's a cool line, and that's a cool premise. But, like, the fact that the movie was ramping up so quickly of, like, okay, they're out of the house. They then get into the sewers.
Which they should not have left the house.
Like, I don't understand why they left the house.
I understand that that other people were getting into the house and breaking in that way. But, you know, you think, all right, well, we're in this place. At least we can grab some more weapons or figure out a way. The place is that sprawling. You think that they could really just get through it.
The frustration that comes with some home invasion movies is because the second that one of the main characters does something that you would never do in a situation like that, you're immediately angry at the movie.
Sometimes, but I'm not them, and it's
true.
And it's also 4 in the morning when they're going through all of this.
They're a bit disoriented, I can give them that.
Absolutely, and they seem to live, like, completely normal lives. Like, they're not, if you put a horror fan out there in this situation, they're going to act completely different than somebody who has never had to deal with anything like this in their entire lives.
Granted.
The fact they make it as far as they do is very surprising.
Exactly, and I think that the reason that I was frustrated is because when we get to that reveal in the sewers, like, I'm like, what the hell is still happening? So, like, I thought that this was a revelation that, like, oh, whatever is terrorizing them is abducting kids and leaving them in the sewers.
It makes you think that, right?
And that's immediately what you're supposed to think.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't fully revealed that these kids were doing it until we see a kid kick the guy down the ladder.
Well, you're wondering, because the one guy's like putting a bag over her face, and the one kid's like, "Don't, you're killing her, you're killing her, you're killing her," and he's laughing and just kind of like,
yeah,
keeps doing this to try and suffocate her and holding her down, and you're like, "Holy crap, this is what is happening?" And you think this kid, but at the same time, you look at this kid and you're just like, "Nah, don't follow the little kid. Don't follow the little kid."
I think at the end, I might have just been frustrated by the fact that a grown ass man was killed by a little kid.
Well, no. He was kicked down the ladder, and then the older kids, who were probably like 15 or whatever, ended up coming in there and taking care of the
rest
of them.
And then just dogpiling them and then killing. But, like, it's the fact that, like, I wish I knew exactly how many there were. I just wanted to kick the shit out of these kids. That's all I wanted to do. I wanted to kick the shit out of some kids.
We know by the end there's four, because you see them all get onto the bus to go to school.
At least.
No, there's four of them, but I'm pretty sure they killed two of them. So I'm thinking there were six of them originally.
Still. Like, crazy. And I don't even know if that's good. But I think the main frustration that I can express by having seen this movie is I wanted so much for that opening scene to carry out the rest of the movie. And I feel like in a weird way it could have worked a bit more for me if I got like five of those scenes and then maybe the last scene they figure out who's doing it.
Mm-hmm. Because I mean, yeah, I understand that.
I would have loved like those short little exercises of tension and pace,
mm-hmm.
because it fits so perfectly in those opening 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it never seemed to capture that magic again.
See, that's where I completely disagree. I feel like the thing that I love about this is that you do see that Clem and Lucas have a very loving relationship, and you see that they really do care about each other. And then when this happens, it's like he can't leave her. She doesn't want to leave him. And the struggle seems extremely real going through it. And the fact that it is based on a true story. I mean, this is like a whole true crime thing. This, to me, that amps it up to a whole new level.
Right.
And it's without like the Hollywood gloss over it, which is why I didn't like The Strangers. We've talked about this before. You do like The Strangers. I did not like it at all.
See, okay, and here's, I think, the whole based on a true story thing. The reason that it annoys me is because when we see it in Hollywood, that's typical for, like, The Strangers or The Conjuring or whatever you call it.
Right.
Those clearly are pulled out of thin air, out of basically a hairline of a premise that has been extrapolated into basically an entirely different story.
They'll say, yeah, it's based on a true story. Ish. To a point.
Exactly.
But this I felt like really took the based on a true story thing and was like, cool, we're going to try and put this back together as much of a perspective of what happened that night.
Exactly. But the premise of what they actually knew what they had to go on, based on the seemingly facts that they presented at the end of the movie, mm-hmm. didn't seem to add up. Because I feel like they would have made up a much better fiction had they gone with less facts.
See,
I know that this movie is fiction. A majority of this movie can be construed as fiction. I know that all of this did not go. This isn't a documentary. I know that this didn't go down the way it did.
It didn't happen to a T, but it took days to find these people's bodies. So
right.
How would it take days if they were still just murdered in a house?
No, I understand that. But like the majority of the things that happen in this movie happen in that house.
Up until probably the last 20 minutes.
Exactly. And I think...
Which, it's only an hour and 17 minutes.
True.
The first 5 or 7 minutes... Actually, the first 10 to 15 is given to the opening scene and her driving home. You know, you take the last 20 minutes, so we're talking about 35 minutes of a movie that's barely over an hour. So we're only in the house for maybe another 35 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I feel like they could have expressed a bit more had they claimed less to be true.
See,
and I know that that's a weird logic to go on because, again, you're pulling fact into fiction rather than streaming a small fact into a larger one. But to me, I'm more comfortable with that.
But see, that's why we have movies like The Strangers.
Exactly.
And that's why those
don't work for you.
That's why some do. I didn't like The Strangers very much because to me that was a movie where it's like, hey, we're in the house and hey, we're still kind of running around. Oh, we're trapped, but they're letting us live, but they're not. And I didn't like it. I remember seeing it in theaters just being very, very angry about the entire thing. So a little trivia about this film. We know, yeah, it's based on a true story, but also Olivia Bonamy suffered from claustrophobia pretty bad. So when you see her going through the tunnel and she seems terrified when she's moving through that thing, yeah, real, real terror in her eyes going on through that, because she did not want to be in that. which was pretty cool. And another thing we talked about was the house, and you wish they had explored the house a little more. It's interesting because it was a real estate in Bucharest, Romania, so the crew didn't have enough furniture to fill the entire house. You know, it was,
yeah, and that's
it was hard
very,
to use.
Very apparent in here because it looks like they just had they moved from a studio apartment to a full-blown mansion.
Dude, they could have moved from a three-bedroom house, and that place is so large. The ceilings are vaulted up so high.
It's insane.
The other good part was, you know, you're saving money on a production because the entire crew was able to stay there and work there and do everything they needed to in different sections that they weren't filming in, which a lot of the times in films you can't do. So, I mean, that's kind of a cool thing, and it keeps everybody in a tight, confined space for 30 days.
Yeah.
I know you weren't a fan. I was really, really surprised.
I was surprised, too, because I usually really go for these types of movies.
Yeah.
I like the premise of a home invasion a lot. But, again, yeah, it just did not do it for me. Maybe it was the Eastern European grime that was on the lens that I couldn't quite shake.
But see, I think that it kind of made it had a realer feel to it.
True, and by Hollywood standards, this is a very subdued movie.
Very, very subdued.
And I like that, yeah. And I can like that. But for some reason, neither the writing nor the scenarios that I kept finding myself in outside of those first 10 minutes mm-hmm. really captivated me. And it was, and I wish I liked it. I wish I did, but I cannot recommend it.
Fair enough, because I love it.
That's fine, and that's the world we live in, where we can
absolutely.
We can happily and healthily agree to disagree here.
Oh, totally. And I mean, there's a lot of other home invasion films that are out there too that you know differ from this significantly that I still find very enjoyable.
I think we could both agree that the film You're Next is probably in the upper echelons of
yeah,
the home
I would
invasion
say, like,
premise.
You're Next, High Tension, Kidnapped, Intruders. There's tons of them. But yeah, I think the home invasion film is probably one of the most effective of the horror genre.
It's an easy, I don't want to say it's an easy one, but I feel like if you want to try to make an effective one, this is your easiest route to do so. Because it's a very relatable and easily vulnerable state to put the audience in.
For the most part, if you're a young filmmaker, probably your lowest budget.
Exactly. You need probably at max or at the minimum like three actors maybe.
I mean, you would have your two or three main characters, maybe a family. Your Next.
If you want Your Next victims.
Has a very large cast in it.
Yes.
It's a whole family coming together. High Tension has like a family and then some mm-hmm. other set pieces throughout.
A recent film called Hush only has like three main characters.
Right. And that's this,
which was not good really at all. But again, it's built on your premise and how well you can sustain tension and meaningful plot points mm-hmm. throughout that. And when done right, I think it's awesome. I think it's great.
Yeah.
But other times, it can really fall flat. And that see, really is up to snuff for how good of a filmmaker you are.
See, I feel like you would have a different view on this if it were part of an anthology series. If it were a TV, because it's short enough to be an episode of an anthology series. And if you look at it as being an episode of like a Netflix series, like if they just made kind of a horror home invasion type series or something like that, and this was one of the episodes, look at it through that lens. And that's how I did this time when I watched it again. Because sometimes when I watch these films a second time, I'll be like, oh, huh, maybe it wasn't as good as I thought it was.
But this one,
to me, it went by just as quickly, and it was just as effective.
Exactly. And to my logic, pretty much every third episode of The Twilight Zone had cowboys in it, and I hated almost all of them.
Fair enough.
So, thank you for listening to Oh, the Horror. That's going to do it for us this week. Tune in next time when we review a different movie, and hopefully we are going to like it a bit more, or at least I will.
Yeah, because honestly, I like all these ones.
Yeah. Well, I'll get you on a few.
Awesome. I'm Rob Holmes.
And I'm Steve Allman.
We'll see you next time.
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
Time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.